Chapter 18, The Progressive Movement, 1890 to 1919. Why it matters. Industrialization changed American society. Cities were crowded with new immigrants, working conditions were often bad, and the old political system was breaking down. These conditions gave rise to the progressive movement. Progressives campaigned for both political and social reforms for more than two decades and enjoyed significant successes at the local, state, and national levels. The impact today. Many progressive era changes are still alive in the United States today. Political parties hold direct primaries to nominate candidates for office. The 17th Amendment calls for the direct election of senators. Federal regulation of food and drugs began in this period. Section 1, The Roots of Progressivism, An American Story. In 1917, suffragist Rose Winslow and several other women, including Alice Paul, founder of the National Women's Party, were arrested for obstructing traffic and blocking sidewalks. The women had been picketing the White House to draw attention to the fact that women did not yet have the right to vote in federal elections. After being sentenced to 7 months in jail, Paul, Winslow, and other women prisoners went on a hunger strike. Prison authorities forced the prisoners to eat. Winslow smuggled details of their plight out to the public. "We have been in solitary for 5 weeks. I have felt quite feeble the last few days, faint so that I could hardly get my hair brushed, my arms ached so. But today I am well again." Alice Paul dreaded forcible feeding frightfully, and I hate to think how she must be feeling. "I am really all right. If this continues very long, I perhaps won't be. All the officers here know we are making this hunger strike so that women fighting for liberty may be considered political prisoners. We don't want women to ever have to do this over again." Quoted in Jailed for Freedom. The Rise of Progressivism. The struggle for the right of women to vote was only one of the series of reform efforts that transformed American society in the early 1900s. Historians refer to this era in American history from about 1890 to 1920 as the Progressive Era. Who were the progressives? Progressivism was not a tightly organized political movement with a specific set of reforms. Instead, it was a collection of different ideas and activities. Progressives had many different views about how to fix the problems they believe existed in American society. Progressives generally believed that industrialism and urbanization had created many social problems. Most agreed that the government should take a more active role in solving society's problems. Progressives belonged to both major political parties and usually were urban, educated, middle-class Americans. Many leaders of the progressive movement worked as journalists, social workers, educators, politicians, and members of the clergy. Beginnings of progressivism. Progressivism was partly a reaction against laissez-faire economics and its emphasis on an unregulated market. After seeing the poverty of the working class and the filth and crime of urban society, these reformers began to doubt the free market's ability to address those problems. At the same time, they doubted that government in its present form could fix those problems. They concluded that government had to be fixed first before it could be used to fix other problems. One reason progressives believed people could improve society was because they had a strong faith in science and technology. The application of scientific knowledge had produced the light bulb, the telephone, the automobile, and the airplane. It had built skyscrapers and railroads. Science and technology had benefited people. Thus, progressives believed using scientific principles could also produce solutions for society. The Muckrakers. Among the first people to articulate progressive ideas was a group of crusading journalists who investigated social conditions and political corruption. These writers became known as muckrakers after a speech by President Theodore Roosevelt. "Now, it is very necessary that we should not flinch from seeing what is vile and debasing. There is filth on the floor, and it must be scraped up with the muck rake, and there are times and places where this service is the most needed of all the services that can be performed." Washington, D.C., April 14, 1906. By the early 1900s, American publishers were competing to see who could expose the most corruption and scandal. A group of aggressive 10-cent and 15-cent magazines grew in popularity at this time, including McClure's, Collier's, and Munsey's. Muckrakers uncovered corruption in many areas. Some concentrated on exposing what they considered to be the unfair practices of large American corporations. In McClure's, for example, Ida Tarbell published a series of articles critical of the Standard Oil Company. In Everybody's Magazine, Charles Edward Russell attacked the beef industry. Other muckrakers targeted government. David Graham Phillips described how money influenced the Senate, while Lincoln Steffens, another McClure's reporter, reported on vote stealing and other corrupt practices of urban political machines. These were later collected into a book, The Shame of the Cities. Still other muckrakers concentrated on social problems. In his influential book, How the Other Half Lives, published in 1890, Jacob Riis described the poverty, disease, and crime that afflicted many immigrant neighborhoods in New York City. The muckrakers' articles led to a general public debate on social and economic problems and put pressure on politicians to introduce reforms. Reading check. Describing. How did the muckrakers help spark the progressive movement? Making government efficient. There were many different types of progressivism. Different causes led to different approaches, and progressives even took opposing positions on how to solve some problems. One group of progressives focused on making government more efficient. They believed that many problems in society could be solved if government worked properly. Efficiency progressives took their ideas from business. These progressives believed business had become more efficient by applying the principles of scientific management. The ideas of scientific management had been developed in the late 1800s and were popularized by Frederick W. Taylor in his book, The Principles of Scientific Management, published in 1911. Taylor described how a company could become more efficient by managing time, breaking tasks down into small parts, and using standardized tools. Efficiency progressives argued that managing a modern city required experts, not politicians. They did not want more democracy in government, for they believed that the democratic process led to compromise and corruption. In most American cities, the mayor or city council chose the heads of city departments. Traditionally, these jobs went to political supporters and friends who often knew little about city services. Efficiency progressives wanted either a commission plan or a council manager system. Under the commission plan, a city's government would be divided into several departments, which would each be placed under the control of an expert commissioner. These progressives argued that a board of commissioners or a city manager with expertise in city services should hire the specialist to run the city departments. Galveston, Texas adopted the commission system in 1901. Other cities soon followed. Reading check. Explaining. Why did progressives want to reorganize city government? Democracy and progressivism. Not all progressives agreed with the efficiency progressives. Many believed the society needed more democracy, not less. They wanted to make elected officials more responsive to voters. Laboratory of Democracy. Political reform first came to the state level when Wisconsin voters elected Republican Robert La Follette to be governor. La Follette used his office to attack the way political parties ran their conventions. Because party bosses controlled the selection of convention delegates, they also controlled which candidates were chosen to run for office. La Follette pressured the state legislature to require each party to hold a direct primary, in which all party members could vote for a candidate to run in the general election. La Follette's great reform success gave Wisconsin a reputation as the laboratory of democracy. La Follette claimed, "Democracy is based upon knowledge. The only way to beat the boss is to keep the people thoroughly informed." Inspired by La Follette, progressives in other states pushed for similar electoral changes. To force state legislators to respond to voters, three new reforms were introduced in many states. The initiative allowed a group of citizens to introduce legislation and required the legislature to vote on it. The referendum allowed proposed legislation to be submitted to the voters for approval. The recall allowed voters to demand a special election to remove an elected official from office before his or her term had expired. Government. Direct election of senators. Another reform that progressives favored affected the federal government, the direct election of senators. As originally written, the United States Constitution directed each state legislature to elect two senators from that state. Political machines or large trusts often influenced the election of senators, who then repaid their supporters with federal contracts and jobs. By the early 1900s, muckraker Charles Edward Russell charged that the Senate had become only a chamber of butlers for industrialists and financiers. To counter Senate corruption, progressives called for the direct election of senators by all state voters. In 1912, Congress passed a direct election amendment. Although the direct election of senators was intended to end corruption, it also removed one of the state legislature's checks on federal power. In 1913, the amendment was ratified, becoming the 17th Amendment to the Constitution. Reading check. Evaluating. What was the impact of the 17th Amendment? What problem was it intended to solve? The suffrage movement. In July 1848, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Lucretia Mott organized the first Women's Right Convention in Seneca Falls, New York. Stanton convinced the delegates that their first priority should be getting women the right to vote. The movement for women's voting rights became known as the suffrage movement. Suffrage is the right to vote. Woman suffrage was an important issue for progressives. Although the suffrage movement began well before progressivism emerged, many progressives joined the movement in the late 1800s and early 1900s. Early problems. The suffrage movement got off to a slow start. Women suffragists were accused of being unfeminine and immoral. Several were physically attacked. The movement also remained weak because many of its supporters were abolitionists as well. In the years before the Civil War, they preferred to concentrate on abolishing slavery. After the Civil War, the Republicans in Congress introduced the 14th and 15th Amendments to the Constitution to protect the voting rights of African Americans. Several leaders of the women's suffrage movement had wanted these amendments worded to give women the right to vote as well. They were bitterly disappointed when Republicans refused. The debate over the 14th and 15th Amendments split the suffrage movement into two groups: the National Woman Suffrage Association, led by Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony, and the American Woman Suffrage Association, led by Lucy Stone and Julia Ward Howe. The first group wanted to focus on passing a constitutional amendment allowing woman suffrage. The second group believed that the best strategy was to convince state governments to give women the right to vote before trying to amend the Constitution. This split reduced the movement's effectiveness. In 1878, a constitutional amendment granting woman suffrage was introduced in Congress, but it failed to pass. Few state governments granted women the right to vote, either. By 1900, only Wyoming, Idaho, Utah, and Colorado had granted women full voting rights. The movement built support. In 1890, the two groups united to form the National American Woman Suffrage Association, or NAWSA. The movement still did not make significant gains, however, until about 1910. Part of the problem was convincing women to become politically active. As the progressive movement began, however, many middle-class women concluded that they needed the vote to promote social reforms they favored. Many working-class women also wanted the vote to ensure passage of labor laws protecting women. As the suffrage movement grew, members began lobbying lawmakers, organizing marches, and delivering speeches on street corners. By the end of 1912, Washington, Oregon, California, Arizona, and Kansas had granted women full voting rights. On March 3, 1913, the day before President Wilson's inauguration, suffragists marched in Washington, D.C. to draw attention to their cause. Alice Paul, a Quaker social worker who headed NAWSA's congressional committee, had organized the Washington March. Paul wanted to use protests to force President Wilson to take action on suffrage. Her activities alarmed other members of NAWSA who wanted to negotiate with Wilson. Paul left NAWSA and formed the National Women's Party. Her supporters picketed the White House, blocked sidewalks, chained themselves to lampposts, and went on hunger strikes if arrested. In 1915, Carrie Chapman Catt became NAWSA's leader. Catt developed what she called her winning plan to mobilize the suffrage movement nationwide in one final push to gain voting rights. She also threw NAWSA support behind Wilson in the 1916 election. Although Wilson did not endorse a woman suffrage amendment, he supported the Democratic Party's call for states to give women the vote. The 19th Amendment. As more states granted women the right to vote, Congress began to favor a constitutional amendment. In 1918, the House of Representatives passed a woman suffrage amendment. Wilson then addressed the Senate, asking it to vote for the amendment. Despite his efforts, the amendment failed to pass by 2 votes. During the midterm elections of 1918, Catt used NAWSA's resources to defeat 2 anti-suffrage senators. The following year, in June 1919, the Senate finally passed the 19th Amendment by exactly the 2/3 vote needed. On August 26, 1920, after 3/4 of the states had voted to ratify it, the 19th Amendment guaranteeing women the right to vote went into effect. Reading check. Evaluating. How successful were women in lobbying to achieve passage of the 19th Amendment? Social welfare progressivism. While many progressives focused on reforming the political system, others focused on social problems, such as crime, illiteracy, alcohol abuse, child labor, and the health and safety of Americans. These social welfare progressives created charities to help the poor and disadvantaged. They also pushed for new laws they hoped would fix social problems. The campaign against child labor. Probably the most emotional progressive issue was the campaign against child labor. Children had always worked on family farms, but the factory work that many children performed was monotonous, and the conditions were often unhealthy. In 1900, over 1.7 million children under the age of 16 worked outside the home. Reformers established a National Child Labor Committee in 1904 to work to abolish child labor. Muckraker John Spargo's 1906 book, The Bitter Cry of the Children, presented detailed evidence on child labor conditions. He told of coal mines where thousands of breaker boys were hired at age 9 or 10 to pick slag out of coal and were paid 60 cents for a 10-hour day. He described how the work bent their backs permanently and often crippled their hands. Reports like these convinced states to pass laws that set a minimum age for employment and established other limits on child labor, such as maximum hours children could work. At the same time, many states began passing compulsory education laws, requiring young children to be in school instead of at work. By the early 1900s, the number of child laborers had begun to decline. For many families, the new wealth generated by industry enabled them to survive without having their children work. For others, the child labor and compulsory education laws meant that wives had to work instead. Health and safety codes. Many adult workers also labored in difficult conditions. Factories, coal mines, and railroads were particularly dangerous. For example, in 1911, a terrible fire swept through Triangle Shirtwaist Company in New York City. Nearly 150 women workers died, trapped by doors locked from the outside. Outrage at the deaths caused New York City to pass strict building codes dealing with fire hazards and unsafe machinery and working conditions. During the early 1900s, thousands of people died or were injured on the job, but they and their families received little compensation. Progressives joined union leaders to pressure states for workers' compensation laws. These laws established insurance funds financed by employers. workers injured in industrial accidents received payments from the funds. Some progressives also favored zoning laws as a method of protecting the public. These laws divided a town or city into zones for commercial, residential, or other development, thereby regulating how land and buildings could be used. Building codes set minimum standards for light, air, room size, and sanitation, and required buildings to have fire escapes. Health codes required restaurants and other facilities to maintain clean environments for their patrons. The Prohibition Movement. Many progressives believed alcohol was responsible for many problems in American life. Settlement house workers hated the effects of drinking on families. Scarce wages were spent on alcohol, and drinking sometimes led to physical abuse and sickness. Many Christians also opposed alcohol. Some employers believed drinking hurt workers' efficiency, while political reformers viewed the saloon as the informal headquarters of the machine politics they opposed. The temperance movement, which advocated the moderation or elimination of alcohol, emerged from these concerns. For the most part, women led the temperance movement. In 1874, a group of women formed the Women's Christian Temperance Union, or WCTU. By 1911, the WCTU had nearly 250,000 members. In 1893, another organization, the Anti-Saloon League, was formed. At first, the temperance movement worked to reduce alcohol consumption. Later, it pressed for prohibition, laws banning the manufacture, sale, and consumption of alcohol. Reading check. Examining. What actions did progressives take to deal with the issue of child labor? Progressives versus big business. A fourth group of progressives focused their efforts on regulating big business. Many progressives believed that wealth was concentrated in the hands of too few people. In particular, many became concerned about trusts and holding companies, giant corporations that dominated many industries. Progressives disagreed, however, over how to regulate big business. Some believed government should break up big companies to restore competition. This idea led to the Sherman Antitrust Act in 1890. Others argued that big business was the most efficient way to organize the economy. They pushed instead for the creation of government agencies to regulate big companies and prevent them from abusing their power. The Interstate Commerce Commission, or ICC, created in 1887, was an early example of this kind of progressive thinking. Some progressives went even further and advocated socialism, the idea that the government should own and operate industry for the community as a whole. They wanted the government to buy up large companies, especially industries that affected everyone, such as railroads and utilities. At its peak, socialism had some national support. Eugene Debs, the former American Railway Union leader, won nearly 1 million votes as the American Socialist Party candidate for president in 1912. Most progressives, and most Americans, however, believed in the superiority of the American system of free enterprise. Efforts to regulate business were focused at the national level. Congress passed a number of proposals to regulate the economy under Presidents Theodore Roosevelt, William Taft, and Woodrow Wilson. Reading check. Evaluating. What was the impact of Eugene Debs and the Socialist Party on the 1912 election? Study and writing skill builder. Taking notes. Why learn this skill? Taking notes is a way of recording the important parts of something you have read. Taking notes also helps you recall information. The guidelines below explain how to get the most out of your notes. Learning the skill. One of the best ways to remember something is to write it down. Taking notes involves writing down information in a brief and orderly form. This helps you remember information and makes it easier to study. There are several styles of taking notes, but all clarify and put information in a logical order. Keep these guidelines in mind when you are taking notes. Identify the subject and write it at the top of the page. In your book, for example, look for chapter or section headings. Be selective in what information you include in your notes. For example, anything your teacher writes on the chalkboard or shows you from a transparency should be included. If your teacher emphasizes a point or spends a considerable amount of time on a given topic, this is also a clue to its importance. Similarly, if your textbook covers a single topic over several pages, take notes by seeking the topic sentences of paragraphs on the topic. Be certain to write down all words that are in bold or italicized type. Your goal is to listen or read carefully, paying attention to the main ideas or key points. Do not write down every word your teacher says. Your notes should consist of the main ideas and supporting details on the subject. Paraphrase the information. Put it in your own words rather than trying to take it down word for word. In order to save time, you might want to develop a personal form of shorthand. For example, eliminating vowels from words saves time. Develop becomes DVLP. Use symbols, arrows, or sketches. The symbol and in place of the word and. Use your shorthand whenever you take notes. Make sure your notes are neat so you will be able to understand them when you study them later. Practicing the skill. After you have carefully read Section 4 of this chapter, follow the general guidelines to taking notes listed above and create notes for the subsection, The Limits of Progressivism. Applying the skill. Taking notes. Have a classmate quiz you on the section on which you took notes. How did you do? Did your notes work well? What can be improved about them? What would you change? Glencoe Skill Builder Interactive Workbook CD-ROM Level 2 provides instruction and practice in key social studies skills.